Another episode of Good Day Health, the folks, the health and well-being of all the folks that listen to our programs. Help yourself to Dr. Ken Kronhaus. I'm Doug Steffen with some rather simple and sometimes complicated ways of looking at issues that are prevalent today. Dr. Ken researches all the latest journals to give us an update on information that will be pertinent to you and your health care, and actually go through some of the questions that we get at Doug Steffen or Doug at DougSteffen.com. Send your questions along for Dr. Ken that way. New England Journal of Medicine this week, Ken, focusing on the flu and its relation to heart attacks. The flu is a big problem. We've talked about it. You advise people to get flu shots. A lot of people say, well, why would I bother to get a flu shot? It doesn't. The government says they're no good anyway. But we get back to that whole business about improving our immune system, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But how is there a connection here?
Yeah, this year's flu is not a good one. And just out this week in the New England Journal of Medicine, we learned that a bad case of the flu can trigger a short-lived but substantial spike in some people's heart attack risk. According to this new study, heart attacks are 6 times more likely to strike following a bout of the flu. So the bottom line is, get a yearly flu shot, especially if you're at increased risk of a heart attack. Also get your blood pressure, blood sugar, cholesterol, and weight under control. And of course, don't smoke.
All right. Why? What is there about the properties of the flu that would lead to a more severe chance of a heart attack?
Great question. Heart attacks occur because plaques rupture in the coronaries, and the flu increases the inflammation throughout the body. And this increased inflammation can push somebody at the tipping point of a plaque rupturing and result in a heart attack.
All right. So the plaque is the danger here. So Tamiflu is around. How does that affect this if people are on Tamiflu? What is it and how does it impact this, if at all?
Tamiflu is a tricky drug because the benefits are a little bit if you get the flu, but they're a lot more if you want to prevent the flu. So Tamiflu may reduce flu symptoms such as weakness, headache, fever, cough, runny, or stuffy nose and sore throat by 1 day. That's the benefit. Tamiflu also is used to prevent influenza infection if you have come into close contact with someone who has the flu. So 2 uses, to reduce symptoms if you have it and to prevent it before you get it. So if you receive the flu vaccine every year, continue to do so. Tamiflu is not a substitute for your yearly flu shot, but this drug needs to be individualized since there are a number of issues with it, including allergies, pediatric considerations, drug interactions, as well as other medical problems affect this drug and side effects. So this is the kind of drug you want to talk to your doctor to determine if the risks of taking it are worse than the risks of not taking it.
So what makes up, what constitutes Tamiflu? What is it actually?
It's a drug. It's a chemical.
Yeah, I know that. But what's the combination? Is there a chemical combination?
It's an antiviral.
It is. Versus, but isn't it true that most of the, didn't we go a couple of weeks ago into the difference between bacteria and viruses?
Right. Wasn't and this that? Flu is a virus. Mm-hmm. And this is clearly an antiviral. And the issue is that it does have some side effects. And if you do have the flu, it only shortens the flu by 1 day. But it can also be used to prevent the flu if you're exposed. But the key is you have to take it within 1 to 2 days of exposure or 1 to 2 days of onset of symptoms or it's useless.
Better as a preventative than it sounds like.
Once you get it, yes. But it can be used for either.
How hard is it to get it prescribed?
I mean,
is it over the counter or is it a prescription?
You need a prescription from a doctor, but you need a doctor who will talk to you because there are a number of considerations. It should not be a reflex. It's a little bit of a tricky drug to prescribe because there are a lot of considerations.
All right. So take us through. Let's say I walk into your office and I have a problem. I either have the flu or I'm worried about getting the flu. And I ask you about Tamiflu because this is one of those things. People come to doctors now, having seen all these ads on TV for hundreds of drugs. They go in and ask that, or do they really? Did some of your patients come in and say, hey, doc, I saw this ad for blah, 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 and would you prescribe it for me? Do they actually do that?
Sometimes, you know, Dr. Google is pretty potent for us doctors these days. But you know, you have to expect that occasionally, but you have to work through that. Mm-hmm. Because the problem with going to Dr. Google is that they don't know you personally. They know the risks of taking it, but they don't know your risks of not taking the drug.
All right. So what would a conversation, if I'm sitting in your office and I'm having a conversation worried about the flu, what would be the conversation around taking Tamiflu? Do they ask you about it more often than not, or do you ask them? Would you consider taking this drug? Or do you even ask that? Do you say, I'm going to prescribe this drug for you, or do you ask them, what do you think? And maybe that comes like things like statins. Here are a dozen different statins. The one I recommend is X, but what do you think? Do you ever do that with your patients, or you just say, here's the prescription?
Well, I definitely talk to the patients before I give a prescription, because these drugs really do need to be individualized. One of the big things with Tamiflu is, have you ever taken it before? Because if you have, you know how you react to it, because people react very differently to it, because there are allergies to it and there are adverse effects. So, and the other key thing is, how long have you had symptoms? If you're beyond 2 days, it's worthless with your symptoms, because it's not going to help. So if someone comes to me with only 1 day of flu symptoms and they've taken Tamiflu before and they've had no problems with it and they had a great response to it, that's a slam dunk. That's real easy. You're getting a prescription for Tamiflu. It's harder for the people who've never had Tamiflu, because there are, unfortunately, allergies to it. There are drug interactions to it. So you have to know every drug that the patient's on, just like any other drug when you prescribe it. There are other interactions. It is also affected by what medical problems you have. And also, there are adverse effects to it. And you have to go over those with the patient and hope they don't get them. Because especially in pediatrics, in the younger people, there are reports of a lot of effects on mental status, unusual mental behavior with these drugs. So you have to be very cautious, especially in kids with these drugs.
All right. So Ken likes to go into things and people benefit from his knowledge as to the whys and wherefores, so it's important that you listen, because everybody, it seems to me, is going to be affected one way or another by the flu, and some of the ancillary impacts are important and may not be something that's regularly noted by some doctors. Other doctors, when it comes to talking about the flu, will tell you that you need, we all are really focused on how your immune system is balanced. And thus the folks at Balance of Nature, last week, when Ken was not with us, we had Dr. Doug Howard on the program to talk about his company, Balance of Nature. He's a medical doctor and he's a chiropractor, Ken, together, and he's come up with this formula for Balance of Nature, which basically is very simple, actually. All of the various vegetables that you need every day and the ripened fruit you need every day, he's figured out a system to powder them, put them in a capsule, and have it available so that you get the benefits to improve and enhance your immune system from the fruits and veggies from Balance of Nature. The immune system needs to be strong. This is your chance. One of the ways to boost it by over 700% is to get onto this, the routine. Take them in the morning and at night, one of each. They're 22 cents a capsule. Best thing about them is what they do, but also it's easy to get them, and the first month supply is free. Work that into your program and into the product. Balanceofnature.com. Use the promo code DJV. This product in your life will be great for your immune system. And that, with all the other things Ken's talking about, will ward off or help you ward off some of these things that will attack your body at this time of year or any time of the year. So read all the testimonials online at balanceofnature.com. Order the product. Get it in your life. Enhance your immune system. The first month is free. Balanceofnature.com. Use the promo code DJV.
Hello, I'd like to deposit this to checking.
Fate is a fickle master.
What?
The future is uncertain.
Okay, and what's my account balance?
Ah, the horizon is cloudy. I see a long, treacherous voyage filled with great peril.
Look, can I just get a deposit slip or something?
A fortune bank teller. Surprising. What's not surprising? How much you could save by switching to Geico.
I see a yellow-eyed serpent.
What?
And a low APR.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Are you taking Viagra for ED? Now you can get Sildenafil, the active ingredient in Viagra, in 20 milligrams for $2 per tablet. That's a savings of $40 per dose. Marley Drug is a North Carolina pharmacy delivering generic Sildenafil to your door. For information on Sildenafil, go to marleygenerics.com or call us at 1-800-601-0310. That's 1-800-601-0310.
Could your company use a little marketing help? Is it a challenge keeping your social media up to date? Or is it time to launch that new ad campaign? Maybe your promotional materials need a facelift. Relax, help is on the way. Just go to promarketingsupport.com. Our US-based marketing experts are ready to serve as an extension of your own team. Whether it's customer newsletters, advertising, sales collateral, the latest digital marketing strategies. The pros have done it all. If you need to outsource a single project or an entire marketing function, promarketingsupport.com frees you up to get back to business. Check it out. Just go to promarketingsupport.com to get a no-obligation quote for your next project. That's promarketingsupport.com.
All right, 18 after the hour, Dr. Ken Kronhaus going through the medical news. This time we visit the Journal of the American Medical Association for a focus on obesity, Ken.
Exactly. This is out this week. That living in a neighborhood with high rate of obesity, Doug, may raise the odds that you and your children will become plus size too. If more people around you are obese, then that may increase your own chances of becoming obese. What is socially acceptable in terms of eating and exercise seems to vary from community to community.
So it is contagious. It's the ambiance around you. It seems that there are all kinds of suggestions that we are, as a species, we're very suggestible.
Exactly.
And we also want to be like we want to fit into some group, right? That's what
obesity is contagious.
Group.
If you want to be thin, hang out with thin people.
Yeah. Well, if you want to be in shape, go to the gym and hang out with all the people that are in the gym. That's easy enough to do.
And
if you're inspired by Ken and the information that he presents, you must know we've certainly talked about this with every passing moment Ken spends with us. There is, in the back of somebody's mind, gee, you know, I heard this from my doctor, and I don't like what he said, or I'm not sure I understand it. Maybe I should go see Ken as well. And you can. Go to he has a clinic in Florida, outside of Orlando. It's a great little town. His clinic is Lake Cardiology, and you can reach the office by dialing 352-735-1400. 352-735-1400 for Ken. You'll go down there. Like I'm going down in a couple of weeks to get my annual checkup at his behest. He spends lots of time with me. Well, we're friends, so we spend a lot of time anyway. But it's really a function of knowledge, and you must have knowledge in order to effectively take care of your body. I actually met a doctor. This way, I was talking about Howard, who was here with us last week, Dr. Howard. He's a chiropractor and an MD. It's an interesting combination.
That's
how often
unique.
Do you see that?
First time for me.
Really? Interesting. Okay, let's get back to the news of the week that Ken is parsing for us, explaining, understanding how it is that you can be influenced by some of these stories. Here is a focus on women and C-sections. Is there a risk reward for both the mother and the child through a C-section, Ken?
Interesting, yes. From PLOS Medicine this week, almost 41% of births in North America occur via C-section. That's a large number.
Because the doctors want to make sure they can count on the tea time.
Well, so what's the long-term impact of a C-section? This study found, Doug, that cesarean delivery is associated with reduced urinary incontinence and pelvic organ prolapse in the mother, but with increased odds of asthma and obesity in the child. Cesarean delivery, it's associated with future subfertility and several subsequent pregnancy risks, such as placenta previa, uterine rupture, and stillbirth.
So I'm of the opinion, having both my children from the C-section department. When Megan was born, she weighed 9 pounds and 16 ounces, I think. Tony, her mother, and my wife at the time, looked like a basketball on legs. She was a small woman. She gained 46 pounds when she had Megan. And it took a long time. Megan was due on the 22nd of December. She didn't come out till the 27th of December, and it was through a C-section. I remember bringing Tony to the hospital on Christmas night in 1973 to have Megan, and Megan didn't want to come out. And so the doctor just said, okay, after all of this, there's too much risk. You're trying too hard. You haven't got enough room. She's a big baby, so we'll take her out. And
I don't think you could fault the doctor on that one.
No, this guy was a fabulous, wonderful, grandfather-y, a more grandfather-ish doctor, Dr. Barry. I can remember him like it was yesterday. He delivered both of the kids, and they both came out. Once you have a C-section, you can't get away with trying to do it the old-fashioned way.
Usually.
So both my children came out C-section, and there's a psychological impact, however, at least you tell me whether it's an old wives' tale or not, that if children don't go through the birth canal, they may encounter life's problems differently than those who do go through the birth canal psychologically. You think that's true?
Well, you know, we used to wonder whether that was just made up, but we now know about this biome that exists. It's so important. This is a whole new arena of research where we have millions of organisms living in our body that we need to make sure that the organisms ourselves functions properly.
Yeah.
And this biome, and a lot of research is being done in this area. I think it's a new frontier in medicine. Is different for those who don't go through that contaminated part of the woman's sexual organs and the urinary tract right there. So you go through the birth canal, you come out the vagina, you're going to get exposed as a newborn to very different organisms than you would if you have a C-section and get birthed that way. So the biome at birth differs. So there really may be differences in how our future occurs based on how we're birthed.
I think that needs to be taken into account. Mothers who are thinking of having, or the doctor's trying to talk you into C-section, don't have them talk you into it so fast because the baby may suffer somewhat. Food for thought from the medical department here. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, we're still going through some of the important information. A lady in my hometown who had been on the planning board, nice lady, never got married. She was very devoted to her work and to the town. 42 years of age, dies last week of colon cancer. And so I wonder, she was a lovely, lovely lady. And so I wonder what she is. I'm looking at this thing from the Journal of Oncology, what kind of foods she may have been eating. This is for everybody. Be careful about what you eat. And the reason, at least here, is a focus on colon cancer. Ken, how do we tie these together?
Exactly. Sad story, but let's have some hope here. This is out of JAMA Oncology this week. Doug, chowing down on red meat, white bread, and sugar-laden drinks might increase your long-term risk of colon cancer. These foods all increase inflammation in your body, and the inflammation they cause is associated with a higher chance of developing colon cancer. Basically, what makes for a healthy diet overall also appears to promote a cancer-free colon.
Well, in general, inflammation, the immune system needs to help you in that department, but inflammation is the cause of all disease, is it not, by definition?
Well, it causes a lot of disease. All is a big word, but it is definitely involved in a lot of illness.
All right, next up, for men who are bikers, you're worried about spending too much time on the cycle. Is it going to ruin your ability to have children? Here's the story.
Okay, so this is some good news. This is out of the Journal of Urology this week. Doug, that men who are avid cyclists need not worry that hours spent on the bike will translate into problems in the bedroom or bathroom. There is some good news here because prior to this study, it had been thought that prolonged cycling can have an effect on sexual function.
Really? It was that. How long? Where did that come from, though? Originally?
That's a good question.
Remember? Yeah, I don't know.
But this is a study that looked at it in a big way and finally resolved the controversy.
Yeah. You and I were talking off the air about the need for doctors and how there seems to be a change in when you're busy and when you aren't busy. What's brought about that change?
Well, interesting, the utilization of healthcare services in the doctor's office and in the hospital has changed. It used to be that you would make your New Year's resolution January 1st, and then everybody was leaping into the doctor's office in January, and January would be a very, very busy time. But this began about 2 or 3 years ago as the deductibles have dramatically increased, and we're seeing it again, that January just seems to be a lull in utilization because everybody doesn't want to use their health insurance until the deductible is used up, and eventually
how do you do that if you don't go to the doctor?
Well, that's the interesting psychological part of it, that eventually you're going to have to use it, but people are tending to just not utilize their health care unless they absolutely have to because of these high deductibles. So January used to be a very, very busy month because of New Year's resolutions, and it hasn't. And in fact, December, which usually was a slower month. People were dealing with the holidays. They were trying to avoid anything but absolutely necessary procedures. December now is a hugely busy month of utilization because people want to get everything done before that huge new deductible occurs in January.
How much do people open up to you? Your experience in the office, doctors in the office, the kinds of things that stories that people hear about, whatever. There are a lot of things going on in the office that have nothing to do with medicine, right? The people only become sort of a social monitor as well as being a physical monitor of the health of your patients.
Well, I'm an old-fashioned doctor, Doug. I still like to talk to patients because I find that I learn a ton about what's going on with them by just interacting and talking. And it's so important to a good doctor-patient relationship. And I have patients who do open up, fortunately, and I'm not going to give up anyone's HIPAA here, but that helps so much. And you'd be amazed what I hear in a day.
Well, I would think that you could hear a lot of great stories. There are people I don't mind telling when I go to see you or other doctors. I use that. I'm a guinea pig of sorts. I use that as reference to help people understand. As a matter of fact, there are a couple of things on my blood report that I'm going to ask you about publicly that will, I think, help some people understand what it is. When you see your blood, most of the time when you are dealing with a doctor and you get a report, it's all in the lingo that you can't read the writing. Secondly, the gibberish that's there, the words and what they mean, and well, it becomes nonsense. So I want to break some of that down here in a matter of moments. I also signed up for 23andMe. Do you know what that is?
Yes, I do.
Have you ever done it? You thought
I
of doing
not.
It yourself?
And also, yeah. I want to tell you an interesting story about what happened in our office this week.
All right. So why don't you go back to that? Well, that's why I asked you about I thought you were going to go there. That's why I asked you about the office. So what happened in your office?
Very interesting this week. A couple of days ago, Doug, I saw in one day three couples, both were patients, and both had coronary artery disease, the number one killer of people who live in North America. And neither of any of these six people had really any family history of coronary artery disease. So here's six people, three couples. They're all married at least 20 years. They don't have a family history of coronary disease, but all six of them have coronary artery disease. So I saw three married people and no family history. You know what this tells me?
What does it tell you?
It tells me that the number one killer of people who live in North America, Americans and Canadians, the number one killer is mostly lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And well, this is
and
why
the two
my
people living together, they're going to eat the same foods and
exactly
likely to do the same thing.
Exactly.
Well, so that brings me back around to what I put the cart before the horse here in discussing 23andMe or Ancestry.com or some of these other outfits that are out there. What I found interesting about 23andMe was asking questions, as you just suggested, about my history. It was a 2.5-hour process on the website to answer questions as I sent in my saliva sample. They're wanting to know all kinds of other things about you and what you eat and what you're sleeping. I mean, everything about your life. And I suspect that it's because they're trying to do some studying on people. And I know you do some research in your office down there. Is that part of what we're talking about here? Look at this as an example of this. There's, you know, and you come up with all of these different things. So the 23andMe, it may ask you questions about your family history, but it may not be as relevant anymore as it used to be. Or do you think it is?
Are
you
well, it depends more likely on the, to have... it depends on the disease process. 23andMe is looking at the genome. But what I'm talking about is the number one killer. You know, the woman's greatest risk to good health is heart disease. 7 times more women die from heart disease each year than from breast cancer. And the example of these 3 couples coming to see me on the same day and all of them having coronary artery disease, all of them patients, none with a real family history, all of them married more than 20 years. It just tells me that lifestyle is a huge factor in the number one killer of Americans.
And you can mitigate that. That's the hidden message here, not so subtly presented. Ken's telling you to mind your P's and Q's if you want to live a long, happy, healthy life. If you don't...
Diet, exercise, watch your blood pressure, your blood sugar, your cholesterol, your weight, and don't smoke.
One of the ways you can do all of those things, and one of the things that helps you in the health department, is the combination of omega-3s. We all know how important fish is. Ken tells you to eat fish 3 times a week. If you can't, omega-3s can be found in good quality fish oil. And then there's krill oil. Did you ever hear of krill oil before? It seems to be a recent phenomenon.
Yes.
Did you heard of it? How long ago did you hear about it?
Oh, 5 to 10 years.
Really? So krill oil, if I understand it correctly, is good for the helping support the bursas, the sacs around your joints that give you the lubrication to keep the joints working properly. So you need that as you get older. You certainly want to have strong cardiovascular systems, and that's what the fish oil is all about. So the folks at Purity have put these two together in this formula, krill omega 50 plus CoQ10. And the pill is a small pill. It's not one of these big horse things like you see. Sometimes you take the fish oil and it not only is big, but if it breaks, it almost is like rancid in your stomach. It gives you all kinds of upset. So here's one small pill that has the power of good cardiovascular health in the fish oil, the power of good, the things that are necessary to keep your joints working and comfortable. You want to feel better? Call 800-355-1493, 800-355-1493 for a free bottle of fish oil, krill oil together, krill omega 50 plus with CoQ10. It is yours free at 800-355-1493. Pay a little bit in shipping. That's it. You'll pay to get it to you, but the bottle of the merchandise is yours free. 800-355-1493. Lifestyle and its impact on your life. Ken continues to observe this from his perch at Lake Cardiology in Florida. So what else? You're very eager to talk about a lot of this stuff.
We were talking before about a healthy lifestyle to prevent the number one killer. Mm-hmm. And the other items to make sure that you incorporate into your healthy lifestyle is mental stress reduction. We know mm-hmm. from good studies that mental stress is almost as bad as cigarette smoking. Also, you want to get enough sleep, 7 to 8 hours a night for adults, and also watch the alcohol, 0 to 1 serving per day for women and 1 to 2 maximum for guys.
Have you heard that pacemakers could be vulnerable to cyber attacks? Do you prescribe pacemakers very often? How much in your day-to-day when people have they have fibrillations and you need to stabilize them, use pacemakers for that?
Of course we do. Pacemakers are a battery and a wire. They're used to make sure that the heart doesn't stop. It allows us to maintain a minimum heart rate. And we have enough things to worry about. Don't worry about your pacemaker being hacked. And
it's funny. I saw that and I thought, my God, is that true?
It's theoretically possible, but it has yet to occur. Don't worry about it. And if you are, just take yourself offline and you won't have any trouble.
flow back again. Let me just, if you want to look for a website that will give you the story of the foods that you ought not to be eating to follow Ken's advice, there's a website called badfood10.com. Badfood10.com. I notice we have a few seconds left here in this portion of the program. Women of color are bearing the brunt of the Zika virus, which has come back strong in Brazil. Why would that be?
Why does the Zika, why does the mosquito prefer women of color? You have to ask the mosquito.
Really? Is there something in this, maybe in the skin, something in the body?
Something about it.
That, well, didn't they, we find that before, though?
They're attracted to odors or chemicals or,
yeah.
Or, and there must be something about the hormones. Or, I don't know. That's, I guess, an area of investigation, but you'd have to ask the mosquito.
Interesting how the Zika has come back into play again. Anything to scare people by the news media. The studies on breastfeeding continue. So I'm going to get Ken started on what is the current one, and then I'm going to do a little flashing back. So what about the duration for those who have children and are breastfeeding them? There's good news for those of you who stay with it longer, right?
Well, this is a whole new realm of breastfeeding. This comes out of JAMA, Journal of the American Medical Association, Internal Medicine this week, because we know breastfeeding is good for babies, but the new research suggests it also might have a significant long-term benefit for moms, preventing type 2 diabetes. The news this week, Doug, is that longer duration of breastfeeding is associated with a substantially lower risk of type 2 diabetes in women. In fact, women who breastfeed more than 6 months have about half the risk of type 2 diabetes as do women who never breastfeed.
Wow, that's pretty substantial.
It is.
So going back, a little flashback, if you go back a couple of centuries, men in Europe and to a point here in America didn't let their wives breastfeed, especially if their wives had given birth to a girl, because breastfeeding, they thought, would inhibit the conception of the next child. What do you make of that? And is there any truth to that?
Well, I think it's a matter of the male ego not getting the attention, because it takes a lot of time from the woman to breastfeed, and that may have been part of it.
Isn't it interesting? Back in the 17th and 18th centuries, a poor woman might have chosen to get pregnant on purpose in order to be hired as a wet nurse. She would have sent her own baby to a baby farm, and this is something that the government even paid for, sort of a paid fosterage where children were neglected, but it gave them the qualities that they needed in order to help women who were, I suppose, in a sense, a wet nurse. Is that the next step after midwife?
Yes, and you know, back then we didn't know the optimum time, and we know that we shouldn't get pregnant, you know, for 9 months at least after the first one. So
we did that with the cows. The cows don't. We give them a year.
So but yes, the breastfeeding would interfere with her getting pregnant, but I think probably the male ego was a bit too large back about 300 years ago.
So does breastfeeding create more dense tissue in the breasts? And when you stop breastfeeding, does the fatty tissue and the connective tissue shrink? Is that why women have big breasts when they are breastfeeding, and then it goes, they change size when they stop?
Well, it's the accumulation of milk. I mean, this is what breasts, guys, sorry, this is really what breasts are for.
Guys, sorry. Of course it's what they're for. The mammary glands are there to help the offspring.
They fill with milk as the offspring, as the child stimulates the nipple, and that stimulates hormones in the woman's body that produce milk, and then the nourishes the child. And this is what they were made for.
Isn't that, what is there, I suppose this is maybe a taboo thing, but thinking about why it is that men are so attractive to women who have big breasts, what really is the psychological reason for that?
There's no doubt that that is a fact, and I think that's just wired in behavior.
Does it have anything to do, notice how I'm stammering through this, does it have anything to do with not being breastfed? Do you think some men more enjoy breasts that are larger because they didn't get breastfed when they were children?
Let's do a study.
All right. Okay. Well, we can probably do that. A reminder about how easy it is to get krill oil and fish oil together. We all know the doctors on this program have convinced You have convinced me, certainly, that krill oil and fish oil together is a great thing. That's why you ought to take advantage of Purity Products' offer to give you a bottle of Krill Omega 50 Plus with fish oil and krill oil free when you dial 800-355-1493. Free bottle. Get it now at 800-355-1493.